Hello, everyone. Thank you again for listening to our next. This is our next episode of It's Gonna Be Okay. I have today a very special friend. He's come all the way from Boston because we are in Los Angeles to do comedy. Casey McNeil.
Hey, yeah. It's me. I'm here.
I formally just met him through Zoom when we were doing like comedy, when we were all, you know, forced to do comedy in our room. Yes.
In any room.
In any room, in the living room, in the closet, in you know, talking to ourselves. To me, it was regular because that's all I do anyway. But we were all forced to join forces and do Zoom comedy. That was the scariest thing. But I have met some incredibly interesting and talented people, and Casey here is one of them.
Hey, thanks.
Casey, so I thought it was funny when you came up to me today, like, yeah. This is our formal, actual in-person.
Yeah,
meeting.
We never did IRL before, right?
No.
I'm using that word, Liam. My son says I'm not allowed to
IRL.
Say
IRL. I don't even use that. I don't know, but it's okay.
I'm not allowed to use any hip acronyms. According
what,
to myself.
What does IRL mean?
It's in real life.
In real life, yes, yeah,
this is
yeah.
Our first in
for
real
realsies,
life
for realsies. For realsies. Realsy, realsy.
But it's important to note that when we first met, not in real life, but became close initially.
Yes. Authentication protocol that
yeah,
I usually
that
put
it?
In place.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Kind of like a machine, you know, like where you're like, oh, you know, for like AI, like, let me test if this is a real person kind of thing. Yes, I did put Casey through that. What did I ask you?
No, it was great. Well, you said, you sent me a message. You said, hey, listen, will you just give me a call on the phone so I can actually talk to you and know that
this is a real person.
This
yeah.
is a real person.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, I remember that. Yes. 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 And we were
it's
all.
It's okay because if there was ever a hallucinated friend, I would want it to be me.
hallucinated
I would
friend.
I would be an awesome hallucinated friend.
Really?
I
don't
so.
Know.
I would
know.
Talk everybody into terrible things.
I don't know if anybody would want to hallucinate me, you know? I know I'd probably be the last person somebody would
wouldn't
want to
be cool?
Imagine.
There's a bit in there somewhere about being other people's conscience. I would like to be somebody
oh,
else's
like, like being someone
somebody
else's
else
like
be my conscience.
Like being someone else's like mental avatar.
Yeah, yeah, like, yeah right?
Like in the Matrix.
That's right. That's right.
Oh my God. yeah. So for this special event, Casey, you flew all the way over here, not just to do this.
That's right. Oh, I did too.
You did?
It was just for this show.
Oh, just for this. No. I understand. So I wore my lobster shirt.
Wore
my J. Crew lobster shirt. Yeah,
you
there
got
you
the
go.
Boston
there we go.
Thing
we got,
going
yeah.
on.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
The cod, Harvard Yard, and all
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I'm also a hard shell to crack, I think.
crustacean.
I am a Cancer. I don't know how much like truth there is to like astrology or anything like that, but sometimes some of that shit is undeniable.
Yeah, well, it's interesting know? About that stuff because there is an actual science to circadian rhythm.
I know that. Yeah,
it has to do with the seasons and the times that you're born and things like that. And there are actual personality characteristics that go with people depending on the season they are born in. Like people who are born in spring and summer months tend to be night people, and people who are born in fall and winter months tend to be early people. And it doesn't mean necessarily like early risers, late people, but it's like the ADD, woo, a party all night. They tend to be spring and summer born people. And people who are a little more introverted or serious, and they tend to be more winter.
That's interesting.
Months.
That's interesting that you say that.
Night owls and early birds. Everybody look it up. Night owls, early birds, circadian rhythm. If you just look it up that way, you'll see all the articles on it.
So the amount of sunlight is to blame as to why I'm a bitch. I get it. Yes. Yes.
Well,
I am.
Yeah, they talk about seasonal affective disorder, right?
Yeah.
Which when I was a kid, it was just called winter time.
oh, wintertime seasonal affective. No, I always have this thing about, like, because my sister, I have an older sister, and she's affected by seasonal affective disorder. And then when they gave me my diagnosis, my younger sister made the joke, or like, yeah, she's hard because she's got depression all year round, bitch. What are you going to do now, you know? And I was like, we're not competing over who's most depressed in the house, okay?
Yeah, right,
like,
right. That's funny.
But yeah, that's funny. You know what? I never took into consideration our circadian rhythm. But there is, I mean, I know that there are formal studies.
But in as much as there is circadian rhythm realities, that ties to sort of the months of the year and the way they drum up personality traits and that. So, I mean, maybe, you know, when it comes to, and the moon, we're definitely affected by moon phases and things. So there may be something.
There might, you know.
I'm not going to live my life according to it.
No,
you
know? No. But I also considered, like, I thought, like, maybe it had to do with like scarcity of food.
Oh,
I think personality trait came from that as well. Don't know, like availability of resources. I always took into consideration that, because someone came up to me with this thing, because they actually, you know, have you ever heard the Farmer's Almanac?
Oh yeah, yeah, of course.
Okay, so that,
like, I was raised in Michigan.
Yeah, well, obviously, yeah, but apparently farmers do farm according to, like, moon phases and things like that. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. I wonder if that also has an effect on the way we see things in life.
It has,
you know,
to, because we all, listen, if the moon can make the ocean.
That's true.
Rise and fall, and we're, you know, 99% water or whatever.
Yeah,
it is,
there is a magnetic gravitational force to everything. I see it, you know. Especially when I was like 100 pounds heavier, there was a magnetic gravitational force around me.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, no, oh my God. Okay. So, Casey, we can find you at Casey's Comedy on Instagram.
That's right. It's Casey's Comedy everywhere, pretty much. I tried to be consistent
at
with
Casey's
the brand.
Comedy. I love you, Casey. You know what? You were a huge supportive person for me when I was going through a lot of difficult things, especially a breakup. You know, like, I know. Yeah, there was.
I like to be there for that.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you're kind of like another dad that I had, you know, but like 3,000 miles away from me, like that kind of dad, like a long distance dad.
Well,
yeah.
It makes it. And that's the thing, because I'm an old guy and all that stuff, you know, I can be the gentle uncle or the nice, you know, I guess what I'm saying is I'm not in the mix. So, like, it's like telling your problems to a stranger in a way.
Yeah.
You know, because they're not part of your group and part of your thing. So, like, even when I'm in Boston, a lot of the younger comics and that will, you know, we have personal relationships or have, you know, we have, because I'm a confidant and, you know, I'm not going to say anything. I'm not in the game. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like, I'm not trying
to
sleep with them.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. No, that's a very important thing.
Is.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Know,
that
I'm
you
not,
have no ulterior motive behind it other than just to listen and to hear them out. Yeah,
right, right.
Yeah, but you have no idea how important it is for just people in general, just to have like a support system or someone to, like, oh, hey, you know what? I'm feeling like shit.
it's really important to be able to, and I like to be able to make emotional deposits with people when they're feeling that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like to be like, oh, everything's fine. Oh, suck it up. Or, oh, it's going to, you know.
Oh,
I
yeah,
like,
the toxic positivity.
Kind of I know, that sucks.
Yeah.
You know, and.
Yeah,
let
no,
me
you
listen some
you
more.
Were very
what else?
Real.
Tell me more about that. That
yeah,
really sucks.
You were very real about everything that you told me, and you know, some of it did hurt. Where I was like, yeah, this is just a hard, it's a hard pill I'm gonna have to swallow. But yeah, I mean, it was true. It grounded me. You know?
I'm glad.
So yeah,
I'm glad.
Yeah,
it's perfectly selfish on my part, because I don't feel good about myself unless
you're helping someone else.
Yeah, kind of.
Well, you know what?
That's a religion to me, if it makes sense. It's like, I don't know from what I know about, you know, I've been through every aspect of God, religions and all that, you know. And I don't know anymore what I know about that. I know that there's a higher power of some kind. But all I know is that the only God I know is when I'm in service to you, or I'm in service to somebody else, or I can do something for somebody. Because I'm getting to that point now. I am old enough where, like, my father was dead before he was my age. I got friends from graduated with me at high school. They're all dead.
Oh, my gosh.
You know? And you start realizing, you know, I'm not going to live forever. And, You really, I don't know if it's, like some people who have a near miss accident, like a almost get in a plane crash or some kind of thing, and then they reevaluate life. I've done that in recent years through sort of my own little Kundalini awakening, where, you know, I really understand that, like, the people who died yesterday, they had plans for today.
Dang, dude, that's profound. I never thought about that. Holy shit.
You know?
Yeah, that's true.
And it's like, hey,
unless they plan that death, unless that's what they plan. They're like, you know what? I plan to die today. Yeah.
Right. So aside from planning to die, you know, everybody who dies, they had plans. They were right. And so I got to make sure, you know, I feel like it's my job to understand my kids, to learn who my children are, not tell them who they are, you know, and I only have so much time to do that. And, enjoy the time that I have with my wife, and it's just too like, I don't want to say life is too short to be miserable, but it kind of is, you know, but we're still going to feel that way.
Yeah. we still are going to feel that way regardless.
But when I'm conscious about, hey, you know, what makes me tick today, or what I am conscious about, you know, do it now, make it happen. Tell people what you think of them. Reach out. Love people.
Yeah.
Be vulnerable. Go ahead and do it. Like, I don't know what these young people can't, what their problem is about saying, I love you. I love you and I love you. Love is a great word. It's a beautiful word. And it doesn't really take that much to love somebody. So I love a lot of people. And I have no hesitation to say, I love you so much. Yeah. I love you so bad right now. And I don't know why there's a problem giving out the love.
Oh, I don't know. I'm still trying to figure that out too. Cause there's certain people where I'll be like, I don't know. Do I really love this person, or am I just saying this because of, you know, like, I don't know. It depends on the situation.
Well, I mean, you got to tread lightly when you're talking about, you know, lover land and all that stuff.
About who you're delivering it to.
Those big words of that. But I mean, as far as just like, hey, you know, I love you.
Yeah.
You know, I love people, and why not tell them?
Yeah.
And I want you to know that you mean something to me, and you mean something in my life, and I'm glad that we're having this experience.
Me too. Yeah. I'm glad you're here. I was going to ask you, so you're a spiritual man then? Is that something that you've relied on to... Because I know you just released a special on Amazon about having, what is it, ADHD, right?
Yeah, my comedy special has a lot of my ADD and OCD stuff.
Okay.
So
you have been to therapy,
Yes.
Okay.
I also have something which is not in that tape because I haven't figured out how to joke about it yet, I guess. I have what's called rejection sensitive dysphoria.
Well, that's something I think a lot of people go through. I think
a lot of comics have it, and it's a weird thing to have. Like, some comics you can tell, like the guys who, like there's this kid who gets off stage, he does a set every time, he's a young guy, and every time he gets off, he bawls. He cries his head off because he didn't have the set that he wanted to have or whatever. So he takes disappointment like super seriously. That's like RSD, so that's rejection sensitive dysphoria.
That's what they call it. I thought it was called perfectionism.
Yeah, that's funny.
I thought that's like what that was. I didn't know it had like an actual.
No, it's like when you go around going, man, when you start thinking that people think things about you that they're not even thinking about you, and you start thinking, man, they don't like me, and I don't think they like me, and that, you know. When,
really?
Yeah, you like perceive these negative things that are going on that aren't really happening.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. I think I have a little bit of that, but like it's probably like paired to like the disillusion and the visions and grandeur and like kind of hallucination. That's a whole different thing though. That's because like I feel like a lot of illnesses will kind of, you know, a Venn diagram. So they'll bleed into others.
They do. A lot. Yeah. Especially symptoms and that sort of thing.
Yes. Which is why it's kind of hard to like
self-diagnose.
Self-diagnose. And then also because people are self-diagnosing, they're afraid to go and like actually see what is
or
wrong
find
with
out.
Them.
Yeah. Or yeah. Find out the thorough detail.
Yeah.
Because to not go, you don't have to do anything to not go.
Yeah.
You know, if you go, you might be asked to to do something.
Yeah, like I mean,
a lot of us like I don't want to change what's going on right now. I don't have stuff to do.
Yeah,
you know, and, I don't want them to tell me things that I should be doing,
or things that you can't handle. You know, okay, because like I remember when I wouldn't have ordinarily walked into a hospital and said, "Give me that 500 test, that question test." But they give it to you when, you know, because I was having this problem with like disconnecting very easily from reality.
Yeah,
and I wasn't feeling anything, and then like the only thing I had was like dread and wanting to kill myself. Mm. Like, so they put me in the hospital, and then they made me take the test.
Is it the Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory?
It was a lot of tests. I think it was a mixture, but it was just
testing you for schizophrenia? Yeah,
they were testing me for that, and then
that's good because a lot of people, it's very rare, as you know, and but there's schizoaffective people is not as rare.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's a lot of people that don't have any kind of, it doesn't get diagnosed right, if at all.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, folks, I know.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, because schizoaffective is like when you have a mixture of like bipolar. That's what that is. So it's like schizophrenia, but it, like it's over. It's like a Venn diagram, like mixed with bipolar. That's what that means. That's,
again, back to the overlap.
Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah. But I did not have schizoaffective disorder. I had the schizophrenia. And I think it's also a lot due in part to, because I've had multiple head injuries too. So that might be, you know, like physical, like actual brain chemistry and then
brain
trauma.
Brain is a very, very intricate and delicate thing.
It is.
There's a lot of things that can affect.
Yeah, that can just, yeah,
physically affect the way you see the world.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And for me, like, I didn't think I had brain damage growing up. People just always thought that I was a very vivid and imaginative kid, you know, and my imaginary friends were my imaginary friends, you know, like, and then I started growing up and I still had them. And they were like, oh shit, maybe this is something else, you know? Yeah. But yeah, so.
Well, how did you know? What were the signs? How old were you?
I
have listened to every episode and I have not heard anybody interview you appropriately about your,
you know what, that's something that I'm gonna do, but as an anniversary kind of thing.
So I won't get too much into it. It's helpful for people to understand your background a little bit, so when you talk.
I know, right? That's also very important. And I know you've seen all the episodes, but like the first person that I interviewed was my friend Chica, and she is a registered nurse. And we were talking about that, and I said, I want you to interview me for my anniversary thing because you are a healthcare provider and you kind of understand. And she's just somebody that I've been able to easily talk to about this.
She has a really nice way.
Yeah, because, well, not only that, she directly deals with those kinds of patients, you know. So I think she has like insight, like actual working insight.
Clearly.
You know, but she's also a comedian, so that makes it even more, you know, like we can riff off of that.
Right.
It is interesting. I have not actually formally gotten into it. I guess maybe if you saw my stand up, then, you know, you'd understand. But I guess when I was a kid, it was just like, oh, she's in her own world, you know, like that kind of thing.
So how old were you when they first said this?
How old was I when I was first diagnosed? I was 20 years old when they diagnosed me. Yeah.
So you're an adult for all.
Well, no, I wasn't. I remember I was 19, but I was getting in my 20th year because I was tested in March and my birthday is in June. So
it affects things like ADHD, OCD, whatever, not even in the same ballpark as schizophrenia, but I didn't diagnose any of my stuff until I was like in my 40s.
Oh yeah, no, it was very early because it was hitting a point where it was becoming very debilitating for me to like function as a person. And I think that's where like the disassociation, like the just separation of just like I would just like, you know, And then it was almost like I would go into a trance, like, and then I would come back. You know, it was a really weird, kind of bizarre thing.
I never had a chance to ask somebody with schizophrenia if they saw the movie A Beautiful Mind and they thought of it.
I've seen that movie.
I mean, everybody's situation is different.
It is very romanticized.
Yeah, right.
I saw that. The one
that's
that,
interesting the way you
right,
put that.
And my sister watches all those movies with me because, you know, they see it from the outsider's perspective and they're like, yeah, it's just kind of fairy tale-ish almost. Although the thing about recognizing patterns, that's a thing that I would obsess over. I was obsessive over patterns. Like there was a point where if I saw like a pattern on like a chair, I wouldn't sit there. I would be like, no, we need to get out of here. This is gonna, it's gonna devour me. You know, it was like really weird, like kind of superstitious thinking. That's where a lot of the hallucinations would come from, would be like the superstitious thinking and like that.
No, that's really interesting. I understand very well what you're saying. And so thank you for putting it that way. Like if like you see something like, you know, a pattern or whatever.
Yeah, it would freak me out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would just go, you know, like, oddly enough, I am really good at math. I don't know if that has to do with schizophrenia or if it's because I'm Latino and like, math is our language. I don't know. I think, I know it's genetic. I know that. From like both parts of my family. I know it's genetic, but I don't think they had like a name for it back then. They just said, oh, well, she would run away and then come back. You know, like, because my dad had an aunt that would behave the same way as me. And well, this was in Mexico. And so she would just run away and then she'd come back. And then one time she ran away, she came back, she was pregnant, you know, and then they're like, yeah. And it wasn't a good story. It didn't end well. And I think it's just like having that mind where like, what I've learned to do is I've learned to like get jobs that work with, you know, my structure, like the way I organize things in my head. So like, you know, I think my dad has it, to be honest, because he's a driver too. And he tells me things, you know, and I'm like, Dad, that sounds like schizophrenia, Dad. I'm like, I don't know. I'm not an expert, but it sounds like something I go through in my head. And then he'd be like, yeah, I talk to myself when I drive. I said, Dad, so do I, you know? And he's like, yeah, but we're different. I'm like, but you're my dad. I don't know. Like, you don't like being around people either, you know? Like, you prefer solitary confinement. But it's just like seeing those things, like maybe he has a better way of dealing with his emotions. Like emotional regulation also is a problem too.
Yeah.
At least it was. I found a way for me, emotional regulation for me at least. I work out a lot. So that helps me.
It helps so much for people. Like my workout motto is no pain, no pain. So I don't do
it. So you don't even do it. You're like, nah. Yeah.
No thanks. But the fact is when I walk, like walking is the thing I do, and my wife will get me walking. When I'm walking with my wife, I start getting creative.
Okay.
I start thinking
all kinds of ideas.
I get fresh feelings.
Yes.
I get good, you know, you get the juice, you know. And I think oxygenating your blood and just, you know, giving yourself that kind of physical nourishment is giving your brain
that's important.
Good
stuff.
Plus, I imagine, I don't know if you... If routines help you.
They do. Also, now that you mentioned routine, like having a regimented sleep pattern, that helps so much. Because I notice that when I don't sleep, I'll be so stressed. And stress is a huge trigger for like a lot of the kind of negative symptoms of the illness.
Yeah, of course.
You know what
I
mean? It just makes me like... I don't think people understand like how quickly I can go from like 0 to 100, you know, with like the symptoms. So I have to like slow it down. Like I'm a little bit more sensitive than other people, you know? So, I have to like put little things to like slow me down before I get to that point. So like,
I have things, I have conscious things I put in the way also. Tell me yours.
I usually, well, before before, like, I had a problem, like, recognizing, is this reality, like, right, kind of thing. That's how I would ask my sister. I'd be like, is this what it is, or am I making something up in my head? So I'll tell her the situation. You know, it's usually just people that I know that are going to be direct with me.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Yeah, so they don't speak. I don't know if you've ever had instances where you talk to some people and then they speak in a really kind of encrypted way, and I'm like, don't do that. You don't.
Yeah, right.
They put on something.
They put on like, some language or something.
Just shut the fuck up. Just tell me what, you know. And I always tell people, like, when I have business relationships or other things like that, I always tell people, okay, hey, look, I tell them, like, hey, I have schizophrenia. And then they say, well, what does that mean? And I always say, well, you gotta be direct with me. Just, it doesn't matter if it's gonna hurt my feelings, just say what it is.
And you know what might, I don't know if I don't know how I say it, this helps. I draw similarities between my in-laws, who my mother-in-law has early onset dementia. Mm-hmm. And she is just, you know, not with it all the time, kind of, you know, but she's very busy. So she's very busily sort of out of it. You know what I'm saying? And, but like somebody with an Alzheimer's, with her, I can't get upset. I just have to continue. No, that's not your sister. That's your daughter.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, you just say it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly.
So that's exactly what I mean.
She like, goes, where's my sister? I go, oh, that's not your sister. That's your daughter.
Yeah.
She's at work. You know, so I just very straightforward correction, you know, and.
Yeah. But getting back to the thing that you were talking about, comparing it to the movie. I think the movie, and I didn't see this movie. My sister saw it and then we saw it together. Have you seen The Soloist?
No, I haven't seen it.
It's with Jamie Foxx and
That's new, right?
Yeah. Well, not pretty too new, but it's Jamie Foxx and Robert Downey Jr.
Okay.
And so it's a movie about this Juilliard-trained celloist. He's a brilliant celloist. He comes to Los Angeles, though, and becomes homeless, and he's living in the streets. And a guy who writes for the Los Angeles Times sees that, because I guess he does a lot of like articles about Skid Row, so he sees that there's this brilliant celloist living on this Skid Row,
right?
And he starts following him around, and like, it's just the whole movie about him exploring like his background and why he's homeless and that sort of thing. But I think it's beautifully depicted, because it shows a lot of the parts of, you know, what it feels like to be inside the head of someone like that.
Yeah.
Like, or inside my head, but not like, not in a way where like, cause I don't play the cello. I don't play an instrument, but you know, like what it feels like kind of going through that emotional.
That's why I liked that movie, The Joker, for that reason as well.
Yeah. That has a lot of it too. Like,
Really get insight. And I hope people bring away from that the message they're supposed to about the broken healthcare system.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yes. Like, and you know what?
This, like, hey, the guy can't get his pills.
Yes.
So now he's off the deep end, and he's, you know what I'm saying? Like
society's
creating him
and then damaging him, and then like reprimanding him too for not getting the help that it needs.
Right, right.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of Utopia.
How can you
punish a man for laws that he didn't know existed?
Right.
You know? So yeah, that's what we're going through right now. We're kind of going through like a dystopian, utopian kind of idea, you know, where we're living in like, oh, well, this is the way it should be. But nobody's explained that to anyone, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's so much to go through.
There is so much, huh?
But what I wanted to touch back on was, so you were in emotional support for me. What do you derive your support from? Because I know you mentioned that you have, you kind of touched on the spirituality. And I've never really spoken to anyone about their spirituality, if that's even a thing for them.
I don't know. Yeah, I guess it is. And that's the way I think to just put it, because, you know, I don't like things that religion does to to, you know, controlling people and stuff like that. It's just about feelings.
You know? Okay, so you're not like, it's not organized, it's not organized.
I have been in that, but not anymore.
Yeah.
No, I've just, I don't want to say I'm lost soul, so I'm just saying, like, my religion to me is doing what I did for you.
Okay. I understand what you're saying. I was like, oh, so we're going to talk about Christianity or something like that.
I wouldn't presume to start a conversation.
That's funny, because I have an uncle when people kind of knew when I was a teenager that like something was off, you know, and my uncle was kind of like, oh, you should go to our church, that kind of thing. And then later on when I got diagnosed, he was like, yeah, you should really come back to our church. You know, and I was like, I'm not going to church. What the fuck is wrong with you? You know, and I mean, I'm not going to do that shit, you know, because I got kicked out of catechism when I was like, I didn't even get, I mean, I got baptized because that was a thing, you know, because my parents are Catholic. Yeah. But then
they
when
have
they
done it twice.
Yeah. But then when they put me through catechism, I got kicked out because I was asking too many questions, you know, and they're like, we can't handle this. What the fuck? You know, like, how old is she? She's like 7 or something. Why is she asking these questions? You know, like, what? Just go through it, you know? And then I guess I was like riling up all the other kids or something, like, just like, well, why is this and why is that and this and this and that?
To the degree it works for people and it helps them to. They gain comfort from having answers to questions that life doesn't answer on its own. Yeah. If that requires a belief system for people to keep that together, mm-hmm. or that helps them, you know, that's okay. But when somebody believes that this preacher can help them buy their way into heaven, that's the stuff.
Oh no!
That I feel,
yeah, no, you know, I don't. Sad yeah, I don't. About, I don't think that either.
That kind of stuff that happens. When my ADD and OCD wasn't, like I said, diagnosed until I was old. And I think the thing is when your illness becomes like it debilitates your life, like an addiction does, like when the addiction makes it so you can't go to work, the addiction makes it so you can't do the normal things you're supposed to do. There's a problem that, you know, when you're disrupting your, what would normally be a routine to have drugs. So it's kind of the same, you know, sort of thing, like when your mental illness is like tripping you up. Well, I had learned and mastered coping strategies my whole life because I didn't know these problems that I had. Like I said, I remember still being with my wife and saying, yeah, I'm eccentric.
Is that what they called it?
my wife's like, no, honey, you're quirky.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, isn't it more like I'm kind of eccentric? Honey, you're quirky.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's her very nice way of calling my OCD out, you know, because like I have to have, you know, things organized into baggies and stuff.
Oh my
like this,
God.
You know,
in my
backpack. Yeah. Like I'm not a guy who, like, my particular problem is not like I have to count to 5 before I walk through the door or anything like that. So I don't have those kind of things. But it used to be that like packing to leave was like really, whoa, that's very difficult.
It was like a doomsday.
And
like,
I would always have like 275 pounds of gear with me wherever I went. You know what I mean? Because it is so funny because I can remember saying to my wife, well, it's not like I have some psychological problem where I just don't feel good about myself unless I carry around 300 pounds of gear, you know? I'm like, oh, yeah, it turns out I do.
Yeah.
So I was just, you know, I would just take the teasing from my kids about, you know, how come dad takes so long to get out of the car, mm-hmm. like to come to the, like we're at the amusement park, you know, before I can go in, I have to.
Oh, you have to pat yourself and
double check. I
have to
make sure I got all the things I want to have that I need. Oh, I'm going to go through my backpack and check every single thing to make sure I better put this back. That's going to be too heavy. I might need this later though.
Yeah.
Like, and I'll do this up for like a long time.
I can only imagine you going in through security and then you're like, let's see what you got in your pockets. You're like, hey, you know what? If you find my wallet in there, can you tell me? Because yeah, I've been looking for it.
No, that's right. Well, it's like, yeah, and that's the thing. It's like until somebody needs a power strip at the airport.
A power strip?
Yeah, I can pull that shit out of my bag. You know, I'll have it ready to go.
So, I'm surprised you're not wearing cargo pants, dude. Like,
no, they used to have a cargo pocket.
Oh my god, that's funny.
So, and it's weird about because there's certain things that I'm like not that way about at all. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not a germaphobe per se, you know. And I don't mind having my hands dirty, and I don't mind, you know, getting the gunk out of the bottom of the sink, and you know what I'm saying. Like, there's certain that's kind of stuff doesn't. So it's really weird what my problems are, you know.
Overlapping. We got the overlapping.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But like, I actually joke on stage about people, you know, some people have these great problems. Like, you know, I say, oh, I have OCD. They go, really? What's your, oh, I just have to be on time. My problem, I just don't feel good about myself. Let's talk about time everywhere. You know? It's like me is organizing things into baggies and worrying about how much earwax I have accumulating. So it's
that makes it's not a, hey, you know what? You got to hear very well. So, so when you did get diagnosed, because OCD is, you could live with it, you know, but I mean, you said it became debilitating at some point. So what?
Was it just time? Working through coping strategies. Mine never became as debilitating as, like I say, there's people who, you know, they can't leave the house because they keep checking the stove or something like that. You know, I don't have, I'm not that mired about certain things, but I'm very ritualistic.
Oh, okay. You know what I mean?
If I decide that these are the five soaps that I'm going to use in the shower in this particular order, it's going to be this soap first, this one next, then this, then I have to, you know, and then it's going to be that way every time.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't mean that I'm going to have to hospitalize myself if one of those bars of soap is missing. So I don't, like, I'm not like, you know, but given the right circumstances, I want everything to lay out the way I want it to, you know?
I can just imagine you're in the hospital. They're like, why are you here, Casey? Because I ran out of soap number five.
I couldn't find my favorite fork. Don't you understand?
Oh my god! And then they give you one in the hospital, and you're like,
"This is not my fork."
And you get calmed by it. You're like,
"Yeah, nice, but it's not my fork. It's okay." So other people have like good. They have the good qualities of the diseases or something like that, I guess. But I actually learned a lot from a guy named Ed Hollowell, who wrote a book called Driven to Distraction. And I recommend it to anybody who has ADD, which ADD is basically the blanket term, which incorporates ADHD in that as well. So I typically just talk about ADD. When I was a kid, it was called minimal brain dysfunction.
Oh, my God.
So I'm glad I didn't have it diagnosed.
Minimal brain dysfunction. You know? Yeah. That's funny. I mean,
they didn't know anything about it back then.
I wonder how anyone with ADD could read a book about ADD if they get distracted so easily. You know what I mean? I'd be like, yeah, okay, no, I'm done.
It's true.
They
it's
read true. Like a few pages. They put it back. They're like, yeah.
It's true. But here's the thing. Like, Ed Hollowell helped me understand, and it's actually my wife who introduced me to Ed Hollowell and his work that helped me to understand that having ADD is not, you know, it's called a disorder because it's named that way by people who don't have it, you know, like, but the fact is that it's not necessarily a disorder. It's just a difference. It's a difference in the way that you see the world, the difference. In
the
way you think and the way your mind works, because the gifts are, we're creative, we're spontaneous, we're loquacious, we're very gifted, you know, speakers, mm-hmm. and, you know, socially skilled, confident social situations. You know, like ADD people typically have these kinds of gifts, but they have trouble staying on task. And you know what I'm saying? So like, you got to learn where the pitfalls are so that you can, you know, have the right kind of systems. It's like, I just need more systems for myself, like with my ADD and my OCD and that. Like for the ADD, like I'm afraid whenever I go into a hotel room, I'm gonna forget something. You know, like my phone, I'm gonna leave something behind. So my system is, I put everything in front of the door the night before I leave. Yeah. So I have to trip over it to get out. I know I'm not going to. So I have to set. I have to protect myself from myself.
That's smart.
By setting up more systems. You know, I need additional systems that some people don't need. And so by understanding that, I actually, on some level, probably more together than a lot of people. But The thoughts are still scattered around.
That probably makes sense as to why you like to stay organized, is because the organization helps your thought processes.
Oh, yeah, it does. And yet some things, like I'm still the kind of guy who could have a desk with, you know, paper stacked up from last spring and stuff, mm-hmm. like, you know, I'm like ADD people are messy typically, you know. But I mean, the idea of protecting myself from the kinds of focus problems that I have, mm-hmm. or forgetfulness that I have, or attention problems that I might have, there's ways to remind myself. And there's also things about the ADD personality that I've had to overcome. Like, you know, I had to learn that I shouldn't always be the guy who's got something else to say and something else to add. And so, you know what I'm saying? Like, ADD people always have, there's something else. They want to talk and talk and talk. It's like, shut up.
Yeah,
it's like, shut up for just a minute, please. Yeah. So, which reminds me, now I should be shutting up.
No. I'm waiting. I'm listening. We're engaging, you know.
Yeah, we are.
But the rejection dysphoria, is that a huge part of it, or is that just something?
Rejection sensitive dysphoria is a big part of things for me. It's also common with people that have ADD. So if you have ADD, some of these things might sound a little bit like you if you have ADD or ADHD. Because it's rejection sensitive dysphoria is quite common kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So where some people would be concerned that their performance wasn't quite up to par, like a comic, we will rack ourselves over it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, and that's a good way, because every comic will do that about their set to some degree.
Yeah.
We do it about everything.
Oh, okay.
You know, I don't think they like me, or I think they're, you know, why would they say this? Or why, you know, like, we'll carry stuff around. And
in your little organized baggies, you carry your emotions. Is that what?
That's right. This is the baggie for my suspicions, the paranoid suspicions of what other people are thinking.
You're like, this is the baggie I carry other people's hate.
No, but like, especially in matters of business or something like that, you know, I don't think these guys are going to contract me again, or I don't, you know, mm-hmm. and I'll tell my wife, and so I'll start going through all these things. She's like, hey, whoa.
Yeah.
You know, like, you don't know any of that.
Yeah, it's like you're doomsday prepping already, right, in your head.
It's like, you don't know any of that. It has happened or is happening, you know. So we tend to, so stuff like, for me, OCD, rejection sensitive dysphoria, you cannot unsend me a message. Don't ever do that to me.
Oh, you know, it'll freak you out. Yeah.
Like if somebody sends you a message and then unsends it.
Oh, well, I'm glad I just edit my messages to you. And, you know, like, yeah.
What was in the first one?
Oh. Right?
What did they say the first time?
So you get suspicious.
So that's a kind of an example, you know.
Yeah.
Of the RSD stuff. So you have to keep it under control and realize that.
Technology makes it worse now.
Well, and I'd say, you know, talking about, this is one thing that really helps me, and it sounds smarmy, but it does. Talking about everything's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
I learned, somebody told me this expression maybe 15 years ago, and I remind myself all the time that everything turns out okay in the end. So sure. If it's not okay, it's not the end.
No, it's not. It's never
the end.
And that
was some of the best stuff that I had. This, it's like smarmy sound and all that, but it was still really something that helps me out when I have the RSD and I start thinking about, you know, this sucks.
Yeah.
You know, I said, well, if it's not okay, it's not the end. Because
no,
everything
it's
turns
not.
Out okay in the end. So if it's not okay, it's not the end yet, Casey. Just chill out, go along for the ride.
Even I think that's funny because I'm like, I'm very cynical when it comes to like encouraging banter. Like when people give like words of encouragement, I'm always like, I'm still very cynical about it. So like,
I don't blame you, because that's why I said saying stuff like that. Like I tried to qualify, go, it's smarmy sounding and everything, because, you know, it's so, I don't want to say it's shallow, because they mean well and everything, but when people do that, it's like, oh, there's so much to be happy about, though, you know, all that kind of, like, telling you, why are you so sad? Why are you being sad? When it's like, you don't
and then it's
understand
like,
mental
yeah,
illness.
And you're like, well, you're not listening to me, first of all, okay? That's why I'm sad,
right?
And second of all, shut the fuck up. Why are you smiling so damn much, you know?
Right. Put those bones away.
why are you rubbing your happiness in my face, you know?
Exactly. If you, like, you just have to do it this way. You just have to get up and get out there. Just
no.
Like, no, I don't think
you're
you
like...
understand.
You're like, I think it's for some people, this obviously we're gonna go back, the cliches, you know, it's easier said than done, obviously, but you can't do that with emotion, you know, like there's step, you got to train yourself, because that comes with the level of thinking,
right? You that's know? Why there's I don't know, you know who Rodney Norman is?
No.
He's a comic. He's a great comic. He's got really like crazy gray hair and a big beard. And he's kind of a prophet. He's kind of like this sort of a hillbilly prophet kind of in a way, you know. And he gets up and he'll do these things. You're like, hey, listen, it sucks out there, but look, you made it this far. So like his words of encouragement are like really keeping it real. He's like, yeah, it really sucks, but you know, go do some stuff. Who cares? You know? So he's really speaking. You should check him out, Rodney.
Yeah, that sounds good, because I know, like, they always, every time, every single like therapy waiting room, they have like those like. Something of
those
a,
signs, like when the going gets tough, the tough get going. Winners like, never quit, and quitters never win.
Yeah, some shit like that.
Where you were
like,
standing aside, like, what's the use? We're all gonna die anyway.
Yeah, or like, you know, just hang in there. I'm like, that's not the kind of encouragement you give to somebody who's suicidal. Just hang in there. Like, no, that's first of all, that's kind of fucked up. Okay, that
just
is kind of fucked
there.
Up. You're like, yeah, are you trying to tell me to do something?
That's
you know,
funny.
Like, no. No, 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 no.
That's funny.
Yeah, no, I am incredibly cynical about, because I don't know. I guess for me, I don't even know if they have a name for it, but where you're like, is it too good to be true kind of deal?
Oh,
you
no.
Know?
Well, it's the fact is that people want to be helpful, but they don't understand and they don't know how and they don't, you know, so they just say things that their mom said to them or to their, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, out of a Hallmark card. Yeah, yeah, kind of just like
because they don't have your problem and they don't even
or they don't
help you with your problem
or they
really.
Don't want to like sit
they don't
down.
Want you to have your problem.
Yes, yeah, yeah, because it hurts them to listen to you talking about it.
Yeah, even if you're not talking about it, it's like it's more convenient to them if you're not having these problems.
Yeah. So yeah, yeah,
just
exactly.
Get over it. Just
yeah,
get
yeah,
over
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
On,
you're like,
out.
What? Like, why can't you just tell me, hey, I'm not in the emotional capacity to listen to what you're saying right now?
Yeah.
That would be accurate. That if I was a person and someone was telling me their shit, I'd be like, oh man, I'm not in like
the
brain zone.
Available.
Yeah, I'm not in the brain zone to talk about this with you right now because I'm going through something myself.
Yeah.
If someone said that, I'd be like, that's a very direct
like
and accurate reason.
Yeah, thank
you
very much.
Thank you. Thank you for telling me. I won't bother you with this. I'll go and find somebody else. You know, like it's not gonna I'll go find somebody else to complain to, you know? Like but no, it's just that people will like to give you like weird, kind of generic blind leading the blind statements, you know, and I'm like, this isn't helpful at all. What are you what are you saying?
So yeah. It's a lot nicer when people keep it real.
Yeah, no, it's always very nice when people keep it real. So so you were diagnosed when you were 40?
In my 40s, yeah.
Did you go see, like, you went to see a therapist for this one? Like, what was it?
No, I had sort of self-diagnosed and then went to, then got confirmation. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, my God. How did like,
you know the comic Ashley Goodermuth?
Yes.
She has a very funny joke about, I have OCD, it's undiagnosed, but I checked 37 times.
Oh, my God. That's very accurate.
You know,
and
so it's one of those things where I'm pretty sure I knew what I had because my wife was like, listen, this is what you got, brother.
But what did they tell you, like, how to deal with it? Like, what would they say? Because, I mean...
Most of them are about prescribing something, you know.
Oh, prescribing a medication.
Yeah, prescribing, like, Adderall or Ritalin, stuff like that, you know.
Can't you just like drink? Can't you just like, you know, pound a cold brew and you'll get the same effect? I don't know. I feel like when I pound a cold brew, I'm like, not, I'm not talking about beer. I'm talking about caffeinated cold brew. I'm talking about brew. Starbucks cold brew. That, you know, like I will drink so much caffeine.
For the energy.
The
drugs so much are not so much about energy as they are about, you know, supposedly about
helping
you, know,
you
the
focus.
And that.
Yeah.
So, but for me, the Adderall made me like weird, because I would binge on it, up and up until I just fucking crazy.
Yeah. Well, so you were doing the drugs that like kids would do in college to like try to like do well, but you were like, yeah, I'm just trying to like not fold all the clothes at once, you know?
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Exactly. You know. But the thing was, what the problem for me though, and what mitigated or complicated my psychological situation and my psychological awareness of it, was that I was a rage and pill addict for 20 years.
Oh wow!
So I was put on opiates for pain management when I was like 20.
Well, what was it from? Did you get an injury or something?
Yeah, I had spinal meningitis twice as an adult, and I had these really debilitating headaches from it. Right, and the second time I had it, by the way, I had to learn to walk again. I developed a queer stuttering problem, and that's how I got involved in stand up.
Because
I wanted to build some self confidence about speaking. But
spinal meningitis, that's like where you have problems with like your nerve endings.
Well, what happens is you get an infection or a viral or a bacterial infection in the lower lumbar of your spine. It's actually in your spine. And then it inflames the meninge in the back of your head and your brain. It basically just cooks
causes
your brain
it to
in
swell,
a fever
yeah.
and swells it till it kills you. Or it doesn't, you know.
And then you live through it.
Yeah, you live through it or you don't, you know. That's why sometimes people come out of that brain trauma with, like, you know, they can't walk or, you know, stuff like that. Like, I didn't have any really serious thing except the speech impairment.
Oh, because I feel like a lot of people would probably have, like, you know, nerve damage.
Yep.
And,
all kinds
like,
of stuff like
neuropathy,
that.
Like, problems with, you know, their operating their hands and their feet.
A lot of people
walking.
Who have encephalitis especially have
to
walk again and stuff, you know. So, anyway, the...
And they gave you pain medication to manage that? Like
to manage my... Because after I had it, then I had the bad headaches from the spinal taps and all that stuff that they gave me. So they gave me pain med, and they were basically like... Back when they started giving it to me, it was like in the 80s and 90s. So that was when the you know, the Shackley family... What the hell is their name? The opiate family. So those guys were making things like, oh, this is the drug to get on. It's the drug to stay on. They had all the doctors convinced that this is... If you need somebody that needs long-term pain management, they need to be on opiates. Ooh. They convinced doctors of this in the 80s and 90s. And so that's when they got me on it. And so I was on opiates, like Percocets, you know, Percs. And I was also on Valium. And the Adderall, and that all this, and you want to know what's crazy? You want to know what's really crazy? I was so high functioning. I was like, have you ever seen that movie, Unlimited? I think it is that with Bradley Cooper plays a guy that takes this special drug that's like a designer drug that makes you really smart and makes you really think clearly and do well. He like writes a book in 4 days, kind of a thing.
Man.
You know what he's on?
Yeah, no.
That's how drugs were for me.
Wow.
I was actually at the top of my game on stage. Everything, you know, I could do a million things. Every detail about my work, every quote I ever knew, everything I all locked tight.
Because it sounds like, I mean, a lot of those drugs are very overlapping, you know, like some of them were uppers, downers. And you know.
Well, it was just a great cocktail. It just felt fantastic. The problem is, obvious though, you know, you can't
maintain it. It's not sustainable.
That.
Yeah.
No. It's like my wife, bless her heart, set me down in like 2014 or something and said, you know, this, I want this to come from a place of love. This is not sustainable. And back then I was traveling all the time. She's like, you know, it's so easy to like take your opiates and then go, did I take them?
Yeah.
I'm going to take them. And then you take it again and then you wake up dead. You know,
accidental
overdosing on opiates is so easy. And then now with the fentanyl and all that stuff, I can't even imagine. I'm so glad I'm out of it now. So she said, why don't you go to the cannabis doctor?
Oh, so now you started smoking weed?
Yeah. Yeah, but you see, the thing was, is it, in my case, it's an addiction recovery. It's called risk aversion. Mm-hmm. Because I can't kill myself on marijuana. I can go big or go home. I can have as much of it. I can smoke my body weight. I can eat, you know. There is no terminal amount of cannabis that a person can consume. It's absolutely impossible to kill yourself on it.
Yeah, but I've also heard that some people get, like, so high where that actually triggers something, you know, emotionally, too.
It may for some people.
Yeah.
But it doesn't for me. Because for me, it was the exit drug.
Well, I mean, for you, I think cannabis is more for like pain management. So you're not like smoking in ridiculous amounts. You're not like, I got to be high all the time.
No, I don't have to be high, yeah. but I am under the influence of cannabis all the time. Okay. But my tolerance is really.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, I'm soaking in it. Do I present as high to you?
No, okay. No. It's just.
I smoked a joint before I came down.
No, it's just surprising when, because I know like some people will have different reactions to marijuana. You know.
Oh yeah.
And now I
for am, me it was a good fit.
Yeah. No, I don't like condone like the use of drugs, because I, first of all, I'm not a licensed physician to be saying, yeah, well, we're gonna say that this works for you and this works for you and this works for you, you know, like I'm not here to give that kind of advice, you know what I mean? But you know, I do think that sending that message sometimes is kind of like, is this what I should I do it? No. If you do, like, you get the proper treatment based upon what you have. You yeah. know what I mean? Yeah. So,
but for me, the endocannabinoid system that every human has was just a really good fit for me. But the problem was I didn't know whether I'd be able to perform not on painkillers.
Yeah.
Because yeah. I was always, you know.
Well, I would.
So I thought, how am I going to smoke weed and get on stage and do comedy sets? But I did. I just started. What I actually did is I smoked a whole bunch of weed before going up and doing mics so that I could gain my bearings of being on cannabis but still delivering my
your jokes.
And I got, you know, here I am.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it probably works for people with ADHD, cuz I know for me I don't think it would work.
I'm not high. Like, I'm not doing dabs and stuff like that all day, you know, or anything
okay,
like that.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's, you're more of like a very, like, gentle high. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't condone the use of drugs or.
It's
or,
not drugs like drugs.
I.
Cannabis. Cannabis is Mother Nature's homegrown stuff.
I still don't condone the use of it. I don't. I just don't. Mostly because I'm not here to give quick fixes. We're just here.
Makes sense, yeah.
Yeah. We're just here to talk about, you know, what you went through and how you got out of it, you know? So.
And that's how I got out of it.
That is how you got out of it. Cause I always think it's very strange. Like I've had people message me to do this podcast in particular and they're like, I have a cure. And I'm like, no, you don't. Just shut the fuck up. There's no cure.
Yeah,
there's only
ways to. Strategy.
Yes, absolutely. There's only management strategies. And he was like, I think doing like mushrooms and stuff like that would help. I'm like, dude, I'm not trying to sell everybody snake oil here.
Yeah,
okay.
Right.
Like I'm not doing that, you know, but for you, you know, I'm glad that, cause I think now I'm not like,
I probably would not be here.
Yeah, well, I'm not downplaying
opiates
the use.
Opiates would have killed me 5 years ago.
Well, obviously, because they have to be processed by, like, your liver and things like that. That's not, you can get cirrhosis. And see, this is the reason why I don't condone the use of drugs, because there's all kinds of reasons why someone would have to take what they take. Because if they have, like, underlying health issues, I'm not going to be like, oh, yeah. And then, you know, because I don't want somebody to say, hey, I watched that podcast and she told me that.
Yeah,
she was,
right,
you know,
of course
like,
not.
No, I'm not.
No,
doing
we're
that.
Not telling anybody to do
no,
anything.
No, we're not telling anyone to do anything. But we do encourage that you go and you do get help every time, because therapy is not the end of the world. You know, it's not.
Like for my cannabis, I went to the doctor for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like,
that's
I didn't
smart.
Just start buying.
Yeah, you didn't just start going to a dispensary. No, I'm gonna self cure. You know, like that. No. You're under the care of a physician. And I mean, I'm not condoning the use of it, because I know that they still use it for treating cancer patients. You know, there's that, and I know that they have other, you know, ways of. I know they treat certain autistic people with it, you know, because it helps them out with it a lot. But those are under
the science has to be really
that's
a long way to go, because only in Israel can they study it.
Yeah, they have controlled, you know, kind of situation there for that, but. I'm glad we talked about this. All right, Casey. So, where can we find you again?
You can find me at Casey's Comedy.
Casey's Comedy.
Next week, you find me at, when does this air?
Oh, no, don't. I mean, yeah, no, it's your show is going to be
over. You
can
find me everywhere.
Yeah, find him everywhere.
I wanted to make my stage name to be announced.
Mm-hmm.
So that way I look like I'm playing everywhere. You know, it's for like TBA. That guy's all over the place.
Yeah. So, I mean, we just got to remember, right, towards the end of everything. Regardless of what we go through, right?
Right.
Everything is going to be okay, right? It's going to be okay, right?
Everything.
It's going to be okay.
It's going to be okay.
Yeah. Regardless of what we go through.
Regardless.
Thank you, Casey. I appreciate
Thanks
you being
for
here
me.
For us. Yeah.